As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. And the disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed." And when he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes. And he said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. And then the man went and washed and came back able to see. The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is not this the man who used to sit and beg?" And some were saying, "It's him." And others said, "No, but it's someone who just looks like him." But the man kept saying, "No, I'm the man." But they kept asking him, "Then how were your eyes opened?" The man answered, "That man, Jesus, made mud, spread it on my eyes, said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash,' and then I went and washed and received my sight." The people said to the man, "So where is he?" And the man said, "I don't know." They brought him to the Pharisees. And it had been a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. And the Pharisees also began to ask him questions. And he said to them, "He put mud in my eyes, then I washed, now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God. He does not observe the Sabbath." But others were saying, "But how can a man who is a sinner perform such signs?" And they were divided and inclined to disagree among themselves. So they turned then to the man and then said, "So, well, what do you say about him? It was your eyes he opened." And the man said, "He is a prophet." Even so, they did not believe. And so others were called. And the others then called the man's parents, and they said, "Is this your son who has received his sight? You say he was born blind. How then does he now see?" And the parents answered, "We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. How it is that now he sees, we do not know, nor who it was who opened his eyes. Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself." Friends, this is the word of God, and it can be trusted. It'll surprise some of you to know I was in a fraternity. Don't worry, it was weird. It was a weird fraternity. You know, it was, they billed themselves quite proudly as the fraternity for people who hate fraternities. And in fact, it was a little unusual, less unusual now, but at the time, quite unusual. It was a co-ed fraternity. And so we had fraternity sisters as well as fraternity brothers, and great debates on whether it was appropriate to call ourselves a fraternity. This is what this place was like. Anyway, got a lot out of it. As part of the weirdness, though, of it was I didn't know I was actually Russian. They kept that secret from the people who were Russian. What I knew was that around January and February of my sophomore year in college, I started getting invited to have lunch with various people And they would be like, yo, hey, let's have lunch. And I'd be like, that's great. And then they would have these other friends like show up at the lunch. And they'd be like, you know, this is my friend Barry. This is my friend Bridget. And, you know, Bridget would, you know, be like, yo, nice to meet you. Do you understand yourself as more sort of deontological in your ethical framework? Or do you understand yourself differently than that? What do you think of Kant? And I'd be like, oh, God, I just want to eat the pudding and go. And I had like three of these lunches like in a row. Like it was crazy, you know, just all of these like, deep conversations. And then I kind of sensed that something was up because this is not how it was in 1990 in the spring. Trust me, I would get a thank you call from the person with whom I'd had lunch, and they would say, so what did you think of my friend Bridget? You know, or what did you think of Barry? And I would be like, they were great. And they were like, do you really think so? By the time they actually asked me to join the fraternity, it was such a relief that the fact that they had blindfolded me and led me through the streets of New Haven at night did not faze me at all. Like, just stop the madness. It was a really good experience, and I did kind of jump in with both feet when I began to get involved, and I was really very glad to be there and really humbled by the idea that they thought that I belonged there. And so it was a really powerful experience for me. So I was astonished the very next semester when someone came up to me and they said, well, you know, Rush is happening. It's obviously going to be really important for some people to meet you. And I was like, I'm like the newest person here. Why does it matter to meet me? And they were like, well, they never finished the sentence of what that was. But I realized that somehow, without my quite realizing it, along the way, I had become one of the gatekeepers of the institution. I had a little room at one in a place where I thought of it as the place that I did my homework, right? Which is a big deal. You know, college, you have a lot of that, so you have a place. And I found out that the place where I did my homework was referred to as Max's office. And I'm like, cool, I think. Anyway, I was a gatekeeper, and I had not realized it. And I thought about that in the context of this week's story because in a funny way, as we said, it's a story about a miracle, but not really, right? It's a story that is about the aftermath of a miracle. And I would submit to you that it's a story even more deeply about gatekeeping. Because imagine what it was for that young man, that blind man, blind since birth. He does not, in the miracle itself, even see Jesus. Jesus puts the mud on his eyes and then says, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. What you need to realize is Siloam wasn't like down the street. Siloam was in Jerusalem, and this guy's not there. And so he undertakes a journey still blind and goes to this place, and it's only when he comes out of the water that he sees. And so imagine what it was for him to be walking back from Jerusalem to this town where he lived. This town where he lived, but this town where he was reduced to begging. Imagine what it was, all the sights on the road, these things he'd never seen. Imagine what it does come out of that water. And he's like, you know, there's his little white cane with the red tip and the sunglasses and all that stuff. And he's like, you know, I don't need that anymore. I'm walking around. Imagine what it is to see, what it's going to mean to see the place that you have lived, to see your parents' faces for the first time, only to get back and be told, well, gee, you know, I'm glad you can see and everything, but, you know, the guy did it wrong. What is it to be freed from the prison of sightlessness, only to be found that the guardians at the gate of your own home won't let you in? What is that? What is that to feel? And it's an important question. It's an important question for us to ask, because I think that what we tend to do as we read this story is to say, there's that blind man. Oh, I know what that's like. But how is it that we also, in our own ways, can start out as the folks who are just glad to be there, but somehow, bit by bit, day by day, step by step, become the gatekeepers? The gatekeepers who are willing to hear about a miracle and say, well, that doesn't really count now, does it? Because it's easy, isn't it? It's easy when we find the place where we belong to say to ourselves, what do we need to do to make sure that this island of comfort in the stormy sea of life stays really, really safe? What is it that keeps this dry land dry? What do I need to build? What do I need to do? But what Jesus is here to say is, God's bigger than that. And that temptation that we have to just sit back and make sure that things are comfortable for us, that the dry land stays dry, is indeed a temptation. We see that. We all know folks who have decided that at some point their striving is over, their growing is over, that they're just going to kind of ride it out from here. And Jesus is here to say, no, don't do that. Always, always find that way to look at someone's miracle and bless it, to look at someone's need and see them, to recognize that the lives that we are called to live in God are lives that are always shifting and growing and pushing us. It's not that the world does not need gates. We know that it does. The idea that there's a wolf that can get into a sheepfold is something Jesus says too. And that's real. But for us, the deeper challenge is to see the right wolves, to see the things that are the danger, and see the things that are merely our discomfort, and say to ourselves, What is it that we need to do in order to embrace these wonderful, powerful, transformational things that God does? Even this man's parents decide that is too much to ask of them. The folks he is most longing to finally see end up being too scared. And what Jesus is here to say is that's not faith. Faith is about finding that confidence to push out, that confidence to embrace. And the great challenge of learning to love. That's what Lent, I think, is all about, really. About asking ourselves, where are the places in our own lives where we have somehow become blinded? Where are the places where we've become gatekeepers? And not of the stuff that matters, but sadly of the stuff that doesn't matter very much at all. And how is it? How is it that we can recapture our sense of the wonder and the mystery and the power of a love that wants to teach us how to love each and everything that it has made? How do we get our hands around that again, even just for a little bit? How do we find that again? Lent says it's not too far. Lent says it's not too late. Lent says that you may be the blind one, but you don't have to be. Because the God who finds that man by the road, not once, but twice, who finds him again, is the God who's out on the road looking for you and for me and for all people, saying, come to the place where the gates are thrown open, with every sinner who stands up and says that they want to try again. Come to the place where the gates are thrown open and the person who says that there is no one who will love me on this earth can look and say, there is someone who loved them from before the foundation of the world and will love them always. Come to the place where the gates are thrown open and the hand that would seek to lift us up reaches out and invites us to step up. Step up. That's what Lent is. Step up. Because we are so often once blind, but in the love and hope and transformation of God, we see.